Good morning. I am so excited to get started on this new series that we're calling Abundant Generosity. Now, generosity is one of my favorite things to talk about. In fact, we believe so much in the concept of generosity that we made it one of our three main values that we promote as an organization. So generosity, along with discipleship and community, are the three pillars that we are attempting to build Project Community and Project Church on. You know, if I went around the room and I asked everybody today what your definition of what generosity is, I have no doubt that you would all pretty much say the same thing. Now, it's not an unfamiliar word. However, it seems to be a fairly difficult concept for many of us to apply. So in order to really understand and begin to apply the concept, let's get started with the basics. Webster's Dictionary defines generosity as the quality or fact of being generous. The definition of generous is being liberal in giving or having a noble or kindly spirit. So generosity means being generous, and being generous means to be liberal in giving or to have a noble or being a kindly spirit. So kindness. Generosity is one of those things that we'd probably all say we value, but how that practically works out in our lives, it may be a different story. In America today, there's no shortage of wealth, yet the giving percentage of income is lower than it was during the Great Depression. Let that sink in for a minute. We as individuals have more than most generations have before us, but somehow, we are less generous than people that lived through the most significant period of poverty in U.S. history. It seems like the more that we have, the more we feel that we have to hold on to it. So why is that? To begin to understand, we need to look back at the beginning. So open your Bible or your app to the book of Genesis. When God created Adam and Eve, he placed them in the Garden of Eden. The garden was filled with every provision that they could possibly need. They were never without, and they never had to worry about having or not having enough. But then they messed it up. In chapter 3, we read about the fall, when they were confronted with a lie. See, there was a serpent in the garden. Everything that they could possibly want was in this garden, but there was also a serpent. And the serpent told them that what God gave them was not enough, that there was more, and they could take this for themselves. Now, this can easily be retold as a modern story. I'm sure that we've all experienced this kind of story in some way in our lives. See, we're constantly bombarded with advertisements, comparison traps, social media envy, and Pinterest perfect lifestyles that leave us feeling like we are missing out on something. This, combined with the natural predisposition of self-preservation, causes us to become hoarders of money and stuff that we really don't need or honestly probably don't even really want. Seriously, there are people out there getting rich off of helping people learn how to get rid of the possessions that they have become prisoners to. And I'm going to tell you right now that there is no item or thing that has the power to bring you authentic joy. In fact, Jesus addressed the desire for hoarding earthly possessions in Matthew chapter 6. He says, "Don't store up treasures on earth. Moths and rust will eat away, and robbers will break in and steal it. No, store up for yourselves treasures in heaven. Moths and rust don't eat it away there, and no robbers will break in and steal it. Show me your treasure, and I'll show you where your heart is." You know, it's not evil to have things. The problem is when we begin to rely on ourselves for our provision rather than to trust God for it. Our inclination to cling onto and hoard stuff comes from the fear-driven mindset that we will not have enough. So how do we overcome this scarcity mindset? I'm glad you asked. We have to learn how to adopt an abundance mindset. To get rid of a scarcity mindset, we have to adopt an abundance mindset. When we live with an abundance mindset, we are able to look past the anticipated scarcity of tomorrow by trusting that God will provide all that we need. But sometimes things get tough. We begin to feel like we're running out of what we need. Our expenses outgrow our income. When times get tough, it's hard to be open-handed with what little we may have. I get it. But so did Jesus. Let's think about the life of Jesus for a minute. Now, I'm not talking about the time of his ministry, but the historical fact that when he was born into a poor carpenter's home. He was the oldest of multiple siblings. He grew up in a desert, in a literal desert, as a member of a culture that was detested by the governmental authorities that ruled at the time. Now, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that there were probably times that Jesus had to go without, and that he was familiar with the fears and concerns that come wherever there is political unrest. Yet he tells us not to worry about not having enough. He goes on in Matthew 6, verse 25, "So let me tell you, don't worry about your life, what to eat, what to drink. Don't worry about your body, what to wear. There is more to life than food. There's more to the body than a suit of clothes. Have a good look at the birds in the sky. They don't plant seeds. They don't bring in the harvest. They don't store things in barns, and your Father in heaven feeds them. Think how different you are from them. Can any of you add 15 inches to your height just by worrying about it? And why worry about what to wear? Take a tip from the lilies in the countryside. They don't work. They don't weave. But let me tell you, not even Solomon in all his finery was dressed as well as one of these. So if God gives that sort of clothing, even to the grass in the field, which is here today and on the bonfire tomorrow, isn't he far more likely to clothe you too, you little faith lot? Consider the birds. So last fall, me and Matt celebrated our 10-year anniversary, and we were able to get away for a few days to a little cabin in the hills around Eureka Springs. But you know, my favorite part of the cabin was the front porch. There was this big swing on it, and I spent so many hours there reading, talking to Matt, or just watching the wind blow through the trees. On our last morning there, I got up early just to sit on the swing with a cup of coffee, and I watched the world wake up around me. And as I was sitting there, there was this little chipmunk that I was watching. And he was running around and he was looking for nuts and he was taking them back to his home, and because he knew that winter was coming and it was time to prepare. You know, honestly, the little guy looked a little stressed out. He was so busy running around on the ground that he didn't even seem to notice me sitting there, not too far away from him, watching. He especially didn't seem to notice the beauty of the morning. And then there were the birds. The trees seemed to be filled with songbirds celebrating the new day. The same winter that the chipmunk was preparing for was coming for the birds. Yet they seemed happy to flutter around in the trees singing. You see, from their perspective, they could see the abundance of the woods. Their disregard for the preparation was not because of laziness. It's because it's not what they were created to do. They could see the world from a different perspective than the chipmunk. Now, is it just me, or does anyone else seem to relate a little bit more to the chipmunk in this story than to the birds? Y'all, I'm an OCD, list-making, sticky note writing control freak that not only has color-coded planner, but the colors correlate to my class folders and to my Chrome browser windows. In other words, I really like to be prepared. Now, I don't think that there's anything wrong with looking ahead and preparing for what's coming. It can actually be a good thing sometimes. However, I do believe that it's important to consider what your motivation in preparation is. Are you preparing out of fear or out of faith? Are you trying to control your future? Or are you trusting that God's provision is enough? Or are you working to just store up a little extra, you know, just in case? So let's turn to Exodus 16. This is part of the story of the Israelites after God had delivered them from slavery in Egypt. Now you would think that after everything that they had been delivered from, that they would never doubt the faithfulness of God. But then they got hungry. You know, being hungry can do ugly things to people's temperaments, right? Now, if you don't believe that, just ask Matt about what happens in our house if me and the boys wait too long before eating. It's not pretty. And you know, when the Israelites got hungry, what did they do? They began to complain. But we have an understanding God. He gets it. So he told Moses, "Look, I'm going to rain down food from heaven for you. Each day, the people can go out and pick up as much food as they need for that day. I will test them in this to see whether or not they will follow my instructions." Go home and read this chapter. Like, seriously. This is a really interesting chapter. But we don't have time for me to read it all right now. So I'm just going to hit the highlights. So what were God's instructions that he was testing them with? He said, gather enough food for your family each day, no more and no less. If you have any left over at the end of the day, don't keep it, throw it out. On the sixth day, gather twice as much so you won't have to gather on the Sabbath. That seems simple enough, right? So let's see what happens. In verse 17, it says, so the people of Israel did just as they were told. Some gathered a lot, some only a little. But when they measured it all out, everyone had just enough. Those who gathered a lot had nothing left over, and those who gathered only a little had enough. Each family had just what it needed. Good job, Israelites! You listened, and everyone had the provision that they needed. They passed the test, right? Wait, there's more. Verse 19, it says, then Moses told them, do not keep any of it until morning. But, y'all, there's always a but, isn't there? But some of them didn't listen and kept some of it until morning. But by then, it was full of maggots and had a terrible smell. Moses was very angry with them. I don't know about y'all, but I sure am glad that I don't have Moses' job. It's easy to look back at the story of the Israelites grumbling and hoarding manna in the wilderness and judge them for it. But don't we do the same thing when we all rush to Walmart to buy up all the toilet paper because there's a rumor that there might be a shortage? The natural tendency to hoard supplies and provisions to make sure that me and mine are taken care of comes from a scarcity mindset, and that is not how God intends for us to live. So let's flip back to Matthew 6:31. It says, so don't worry away with your what'll we eat and what'll we drink and what'll we wear. Those are all the kinds of things that the Gentiles fuss about. And your heavenly Father knows that you need all of them. Instead, make your top priority God's kingdom and his way of life. All of these things will be given to you as well. So don't worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow can worry about itself. One day's trouble at a time is quite enough. The key to overcoming a scarcity mindset is to make your top priority God's kingdom and his way of life. Simply put, trust God and allow him and his infinite understanding and grace to be your provision. The author Randy Alcorn shared an intriguing perspective regarding the question of how to overcome a scarcity mindset. He said, God's grace is the lightning, and our giving is the thunder. Just like thunder follows lightning, giving follows grace. It is possible to give without a deep understanding of God's grace. It is impossible to have a deep understanding of God's grace and not give. So where does thunder come from? What causes thunder? Thunder is caused by a rapid expansion of the air surrounding the path of a lightning bolt. Simply put, thunder is the result of lightning. So what does this have to do with overcoming a scarcity mindset? By this example, we see that our generosity is the result of God's grace. Therefore, recognizing God's grace in our lives is the key to overcoming a scarcity mindset. Don't miss that. The key to overcoming a scarcity mindset is recognizing God's grace in our lives. Let's take another look at the giving statistic in America that I mentioned earlier with this perspective in mind. Could it be that instead of having a generosity problem, we really have an understanding of grace problem? Even when we do give of ourselves, are we doing it out of a feeling of obligation or as a thunderous clap in thankful response to God's grace? A common way that I've heard of God's grace described is unmerited mercy. It is favor, kindness, love, and forgiveness. It is a permanent offer of second, third, or 70th chances. There are no words that can fully capture the depth of God's grace and love for us. You may ask at this point how I can be so certain that God will supply what I need if I'm generous with what I have. My answer is simple. Because He's never let me down. I could stand up here today and tell you story after story of how God has been faithful to provide for me when I was faithful to yield to Him. But I'm going to save most of those for another series that we have coming up this fall. But I do want to leave you with one story to remind you that we are not just talking about being generous with our money or stuff. We are talking about being generous with our lives. In January of 2020, God really began challenging me to live more open-handed. I felt like I'd done a pretty good job in this area, but one thing that I was still holding on to tightly was my home. Now, this is my little warning for you guys. If you ask God a question, He's going to give you an answer. So I asked God, "What is it in my life that I haven't fully surrendered to You?" And I was very surprised when He revealed to me that it was my home. See, my me time is very important. I've always been a loner. Like, I like people, I like being around people, but at the end of the day, I need to be able to go and just be by myself for a little bit to kind of recharge. My home has always served as my fortress of solitude, my hiding place. I didn't care to have people over for dinner. That was fine. But that was about it. But see, God was pointing out to me that my home wasn't just mine. It was a resource that He has entrusted me with in order to help build His kingdom. In other words, it's not about me. So let's fast forward a couple months to when this thing called COVID hit. In the middle of all the uncertainty, and if you remember back to that first week or so, when all of the news reports, everything, the fear, the uncertainty was all around us. In the middle of all this, I looked into the eyes of someone who needed a safe place to call home. And before I realized what was happening, I asked her to move in with us. And looking back, I can see how God had been preparing me for that moment. And long story short, the relationships, the perspective, the experiences, and the growth that I have personally experienced since that moment have all resulted from me being willing to let go of a little bit of my comfort to be open to sharing my home with someone. It has been incredible. So what does that have to do with being generous? Well, when you come to a place of understanding the depth of God's grace, you can't help but respond with open generosity to others. See, in that moment, I knew I would be okay. I knew that my family was going to be okay, that we had our home, that we could, if it came to a quarantine, we could hole up together and we would be okay. But God revealed to me that that is not a luxury that everybody had. It was only by God's grace that I had the security of a home in that moment. So it was only by God's grace that I had no choice but to respond with open generosity. See, when I learned to look at my home as a resource that God had entrusted to me, then it became easier to be generous with it. You know, we love VeggieTales in my home. I grew up watching VeggieTales, and my boys love watching VeggieTales now. One of the shows that I've always loved is about how the character Madame Blueberry learns how to have an abundance mindset rather than a scarcity mindset. See, Madame Blueberry was a very wealthy, very proper blueberry, and she liked things, and she filled her home with things. She couldn't get enough stuff. She kept returning to Stuff Mart and buying more stuff because she was looking for joy. Until she met little Junior Asparagus. And he was thankful for everything that he had. And she didn't understand because he didn't have much. But see, Junior sang her a song. And in that song, he said, "A thankful heart is a happy heart. Be glad for what you have. That's an easy place to start." See, if we can learn to start with a heart of gratitude, then we will naturally adopt a mindset of abundance and begin to live a life of abundant generosity.